Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can also follow me on Blue Sky at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. I am joined by my good friends, Perry Goldstein and Wisco Grant. You can find her at Perry underscore Goldstein. You can find him at Wisco Grant. Friends, it was a great day of football, stress-free, relaxing, no Packers to have to deal with, good, bad, ugly, or indifferent. It was just fun football. But before we get to that, how are you guys doing?
I'm good. Yeah, it was a fun day of football. Nice, relaxing weekend. But I have to say, Sundays are not the same without the Packers on. Just not.
It's fair. It's fair. Grant, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. From a content perspective, I didn't miss watching the Badgers, but not having either football team playing this weekend, it's like it was just a quiet week. So I actually am glad that I didn't have to watch the Badgers, but I would have preferred the content as someone who needs the games a little bit. But that's fine. Watched other games. Stress-free, like you said.
Well, you get to go all in on what the Milwaukee Bucks are, or should say, are not doing. So you have that as content this week for sure. That's, I'm sure, to get some takes on it. But yeah, we had no Badgers. We had no Packers, but we did have a fun day of football overall. And that brings me to right away. I'm just gonna do it because I love to do it. Our Luigi's Pizza. Today's the team of the day. I'm celebrating this as a victory Monday. You know why? Because stick a fork in the Chicago Bears. They are done. My team of the day is the New England Patriots. Kudos to you, New England Patriots. We raise a glass to you. I talked about it last week on the radio. I talked about it on the podcast. If you go back and look at this Bears schedule the remainder of the way, and obviously they have lost the Hail Mary game to Washington, a beatdown by the Cardinals, and then looked absolutely listless today against the Patriots. Now they have Packers, Vikings, Lions, 49ers, Vikings, Lions, Seahawks, Packers. That's the remaining schedule. I will say that one more time. Packers, Vikings, Lions, 49ers, Vikings, Lions, Seahawks, Packers. Their easiest game is against the Seahawks at home. Everything else is either a divisional game against the division of death and or a game at San Francisco. Like, good luck, Chicago Bears, the rest of the way. It is done. It is finished. Finite. It's over. Stick a fork in them. They're done. So kudos to you, New England Patriots. You are my Luigi's Pizza team of the day. It was a fun day of football. What'd you guys think of that game in particular?
Are you calling the NFC North the division of death?
Meaning like it's the in the World Cup, if you have the four best teams are the toughest division is considered the group of death, right? Because they're all just going to like beat up on each other. Yeah. So yes, I think the NFC North is the group of death. I think this is the division you do not want to be in because there's too many talented football teams in it. So yes, I am calling it the division of death.
I love it. I love it. It's dark. It's full of humor because it's definitely satirical. I love it. I think it's perfect. And it's also encapsulates everything I feel about playing any of these division games coming up for the Packers too.
But imagine you're the Bears.
Like, yeah. I mean, except the Bears games, which the Packers have after their bye. I really enjoyed today. I thought when you looked at the slate going into it, I'm like, I don't know how I feel about any of these games. And then they really delivered, which is always the best. I'll pick a different game. Wow. There were some good, I mean, speaking of lifeless, the Vikings looked very bad against the Jaguars today as well. So very barely beat them. I don't know if the Packers just opened up the Jaguars defense, but they had like three takeaways against Sam Darnold. So bad for us, but you know, good for us also because, they almost beat the Vikings. I don't know. I talked about this pre-show, but I really enjoyed the Commander Steelers game of the day for me. Just like really good game, good football. Like as someone who just got to watch football today from the perspective of a fan with no rooting interest, although a little rooting interest because I'm a huge Jaden Daniels fan now. Just really, really fun back and forth, good, solid football game. Really enjoyed that one.
My favorite game, and I'm thrilled that neither one of you mentioned it, because sometimes if you're the third person to go, like I love – one of my favorite players in the league to watch is Kyler Murray. Cause I think when Kyler Murray is on, like, I don't know that there's a more fun player. Like, there's a little Steph Curry where it's like, I don't know how consistent it always is. And I don't know that I'd want him leading my team, but just as an entertainment product, it's electric. Like some of the throws he made and runs, and it came against the Jets. I'm kind of past the point now where I feel emotionally charged rooting one way for against the Jets, just cause they're cooked. Like it's almost sad. It's sad. Like their defense didn't get, I don't think the Cardinals even punted until the very end of the game. Like they couldn't buy a stop. It's Devontae Adams dropped a touchdown, which I crushed me in fantasy, but besides the point, like the Jets are just cooked. And it was really fun. Trey McBride is loads of fun and Kyler Murray is just a blast. So that was probably my favorite game of the day, but to take it back to where we started, really jarring to see what the Patriots did to the Bears. Cause I don't know if a lot of people have paid close attention to the Patriots this year. That's a coaching staff that most fans in Boston don't really believe in. You have coordinators that have never coordinated or called plays before. Gerard Mayo like picked the wrong direction of the field last week. And then Drake May was talking about throwing into the wind in his postgame presser. Like it's like New England's been a mess. And for them to handle, like Chicago could do nothing today. Just a really jarring result. And something could happen because, you know, we're recording podcasting. I hope they don't fire Eberflus at any point, because then they would get the bump next week. You would think right against the Packers next week. So I'm hoping against that. But if you were ever to fire a coach in season, that's the type of performance where it would happen. It was that bad for the Bears today, to kind of circle back to where you started, Andy.
The offense looked like they quit in Chicago. And that's always a sign of like, oh boy, you probably need to do something. I don't know where they go. This is going to be another situation. And I guess it's really difficult to fire anyone at 4-5, right? Like they're 4-5. They're 4-1 at home on the season. This is their first loss at home of the season. They've got another home game against Green Bay next week. But it's really, really difficult to look at the Chicago team and say that there's any hope really from here on out. And they're going to end up in the same cycle where they've got this new quarterback and they're going to have to nuke everything around him and start everything from scratch. And you're never on the same timeline with GM, coach, and quarterback at the same time. And like their defense is still pretty good, although they had their issues again today. You obviously had the Tyreek Stevenson play a couple weeks ago, which garnered a lot of national headlines. They are just in a terrible, terrible, terrible spot. And like, if you look at it, this was the Bears on offense today. Punt, 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 field goal, punt, 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 turnover on downs, turnover on downs. They had 59 plays for 142 yards, 59 plays, 142 yards, 2.4 yards per play, 2.4 on average per play, 3 total points at home in Chicago, where the fans rained down boos on the offense the vast majority of the day. And then, like I said, they now have that murderer's row of a schedule the remainder of the way. So it is a nightmare situation for Chicago, which we don't mind. And as I jokingly posted on Twitter, I said, I cannot wait until the 2025 offseason where I have to hear all over again of how it's going to be different for the Bears in 2025. It's going to be different. It's going to be different this time. Good luck. It's a nightmare every year. And hopefully Green Bay can finish it off this week.
It's unfortunate to me because like you get this guy who's supposedly like this generational talent, and he is. I mean, he's supremely talented. So I feel like to mess things up with a quarterback like Caleb Williams, like you need to try. I mean, Andy, to your point of like 2.4 yards per play is like, he could hand the ball off every time and you should still get more yards than that. Right. Yep. So you're doing something like wrong, like very, very wrong offensively to get nothing out of a guy with an arm like Caleb with the weapons. I mean, they have weapons around him too. And to have your team be quitting halfway through the season with a new, not just new quarterback, but you have the number one pick. You have the supposedly best talent in the draft at the helm who came in fired up, ready to lead your team, and already halfway through the season, your team is quitting. Like that to me is just like an institutional failure and not any kind of indictment on the players.
Well, they can't protect him. That was clear today. Like he was under fire all game. But then there were even instances where he's missing throws he's really capable of making. Because at the end of the Commanders game, like, the Bears were awful in that Commanders game for most of it. But then in the fourth quarter, some of the throws that Caleb Williams was making, especially when flushed out of the pocket or with guys in his lap, like he was dealing. Like, he's very capable of making these throws. And point to your point, Perry, with these wide receivers who on a lot of these routes, they've seemingly quit. Like, yeah, okay, you can say they've quit on the coaches, but they're also quitting on their quarterback. And he's got a line who can't protect him, and now he can't trust these receivers to snap off the routes the way that they're supposed to. And I don't think he can drop back or release the ball with any confidence. So Bears are a rival, but I almost feel bad for Caleb. It's like, well, what's he supposed to do?
Yeah.
They could kind of run the ball today. Like, the Patriots don't have a good run defense, but even that, like, they just had nothing to lean on. And for a young quarterback, that's such a tough spot to be in. And I think that has to do a little bit with the guys around him. And I won't say they're hanging him out to dry, but they're certainly not making life easier on him.
Yeah. I hate watching, like, these really young, talented rookie quarterbacks kind of get thrown into the fire and then just, like, flame out, because we see it every year. And it's really sad to watch them get drafted into situations where they don't get to thrive. And it's not to say that every quarterback needs to sit in order to thrive. Like, some players are ready to start and can do that, but it really is up to, your point, Grant, everyone around them to step up, and also the coaching staff, the trainers, the GM, everyone, to, like, put them in a position to succeed. I mean, we literally watched the Panthers bench Bryce Young and then bring back Bryce Young, and now they're on a win streak, which is awesome, and I love that for him. But, like, on the flip side of this game, you're seeing Drake May step in, right? And the Patriots were very adamant about not starting him this season. They had a vet guy in the building. They wanted to see Jacoby Brissett first. They wanted Drake May to, like, take a few games, and then when he was ready, they put him in there. And it's halfway through the season, right? It's not like he sat for forever, but he's, like, looks so much more just, like, comfortable and developed. And, like, yes, maybe people don't love the decisions that this coaching staff has made, but, like, at least for the quarterback, he looks like he's, like, in command of this offense, even if it doesn't look pretty and perfect all the time. And it's the same with a bunch of other rookie quarterbacks around the league. I mean, not everyone's going to be Jaden Daniels or CJ Stroud, who step in immediately and are amazing. But you have to know who you have and set them up to succeed. And the Bears just repeatedly don't do that.
And I think when you look at this Bears team, a lot was made out of, oh, they got him DeAndre Swift, and they got him Gerald Everett. They got him Roma Dunze and Keenan Allen. And of course, DJ Moore was already there. That was great. You could see from a mile away, the offensive line was not there. And you're doing so much more harm than good if you don't build that offensive line around a young quarterback first and give them the time, because things are already flowing so fast for a young quarterback that now if you're having a leaky offensive line that can't pass protect in front of them, it speeds everything up and you're just in total no man's land. And it's not to say that, like, you can do the reverse and have a really good offensive line and give them no weapons either, because sometimes that can be an issue too. You have to have at least somebody that you can go to in those situations. But even then, I would still much rather have it be you build the offensive line and then build the weapons up after that if need be. And more often than not, weapons become available. We've seen Amari Cooper get traded, Devontae Adams get traded, DeAndre Hopkins get traded. Like, we have seen wide receiver after wide receiver after wide receiver come available outside of Cam Robinson, who got traded from Jacksonville to Minnesota, and he's an okay offensive tackle. You just do not see good offensive linemen become available. So when the Bears are picking in the top 10 and have the opportunity to pick one of those top offensive linemen and they go Roma Dunze after they already went and got Keenan Allen and Gerald Everett and DeAndre Swift and DJ Moore, and obviously that entire, basically the weapon group that they have, It's just malpractice. You cannot go into a season with a young QB and have all these questions. Now, to be somewhat fair to the Bears, not that we're pining to be fair to the Bears, but their offensive line is just massively beat up. Tevin Jenkins went out of this game. Nate Davis was scratched before the game with, like, a back issue that flared up. They've got, like, two or three other guys that have been missing. So it's even worse than what it should be. But even going into the season, you knew that was going to be a problem. So we'll talk about Packers Bears later. That's definitely going to be something that they have to take advantage of. This has to be a week where the Packers defensive front steps up in a major way and shows that they can actually go and win their one-on-ones against this Bears beat up offensive line. But It's a very tough scene in Chicago, as to your point earlier, Grant. It's a very tough scene in New York right now. That team is done, and the Aaron Rodgers experiment has officially failed. One team that's not done, Perry Goldstein, is, I know, somebody that you said you wanted to talk about a little bit, your favorite team, the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh my God. Can they stop winning? It's just, it's so annoying. Like, okay. Look, there is something to be said for a team that just like finds ways to win, but there also is just something about watching a team who does not deserve to win some of these matchups. They are not nearly as good as any of these past Chiefs teams, and they just keep winning and they're still undefeated, and it's just not fun to watch, quite frankly. I find it really frustrating and annoying, and I can't imagine like being in their division or playing them at all or being in the AFC, because but I do think, because you mentioned this before we started recording, Andy, that it's going to catch up with them at some point, because they are going to play a more formidable opponent and they are actually going to be tested. And I'm looking forward to seeing how they actually stack up, because, you know, they played the Ravens, but it was week one, and week one is always fluky and wonky, right? And that even went down to the wire, that game. That was a great game. So I would love to see them, you know, play the Ravens again, or another, you know, one of these.
How about next week? Chiefs at Bills this coming week.
Yeah, I was just about to say they're going to play the Bills, right? So I would love to see them actually go up against like a playoff contending team and see how they fare. Because if they end up stepping up and they win, then okay, maybe the Chiefs are just the Chiefs and this is who they are and they just find ways to win. But if they end up getting beat by what I think is a better opponent, then I think maybe some of these wins are questionable, but at the end of the day, it's in the win column and it just doesn't really matter.
I'll go ahead, Grant.
I just kind of get a kick out of it. I think it's funny because I don't really have anything against the Chiefs. It's the funniest is when these games come down to the final possession and then there's like a call or a play that could have been called and everyone thinks the league is in the bag for the Chiefs. And I just think it's funny because we did this with the Patriots for years, and now the Chiefs have kind of become boring in the same way that the Patriots were just a boring winning machine for a while. And that the Patriots drove me nuts. Maybe it's that I'm older and I'm an adult now and I don't let it bother me, but I just think it's funny that they win games like today, because people like Perry are mad. And I think that's good for entertainment. It's just funny to me.
You're welcome. Sorry.
There was a part of the Evil Empire Patriots that I always enjoyed, because they did so, I mean, I get the Deflategate stuff and things like that, but like their brand of football was so pleasing to watch, and like how they were like creative with stuff, going for it on fourth down, analytically driven. Like there were so many things that they did well. One year they could be a power run team. The next year it was like five wide and chucking it deep. And like, they would reinvent themselves so many times, and always still kind of cheering against them to lose, but like deep down just having like this unbelievable respect for what they were doing and just kind of tearing through the league. The Chiefs, I've had a little bit of that within the past. This Chiefs team, I don't really have that feel. I don't really have a feel for like that they're playing good football or that like it's anything that I'm super excited to watch or anything. It just, it feels weird that they're coming away with these wins to an extent.
That's how I feel too. Like, I have so much respect for the Chiefs, and Andy Reid is a play caller, and obviously Pat Mahomes is a player. I mean, he's incredible, as is Travis Kelce. And there have been teams in the past that are just like absolute powerhouse juggernauts. But this year in particular, they're just like not playing very good football. Yeah. And they see, it's just like gritty and gross, and they seem to continue to find ways to win. And I'm sure if you're a Chiefs fan, you love this. But as someone who just like watches football, I'm like, I'm kind of not, it's not enjoyable.
I bet even as a Chiefs fan, because they've known how to win like these blowout games in the past, I bet even there's a level of frustration in KC where they're like, this doesn't feel right. Like, we know we're happy that they're wins, but we know kind of deep down it's just a degree of off. And maybe KC, the worrisome thing is, right, that KC just figures it out. And like all of a sudden, imagine if they figure it out, like what they can do. They're winning when they don't have it figured out. But yeah, right now it doesn't feel right in KC.
I just feel like, go ahead. I'm just very quickly. I just feel like this is also a problem. So many of the pieces of this team that they were supposed to build around and score with this year just aren't there. So they're having to win like this. I feel like that's a big part of it too. Sorry, Perry.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say, before we moved on, can we just like really quick talk about CMC's season debut?
Go for it. The floor is yours.
Oh, I mean, I was just curious what you all thought. Because I don't know, you never know like what a player is going to look like when they come back from such a long injury, and it took him forever to come back. And I wasn't sure if I should like temper my expectations or if like they were holding him out, you know, this long so he could be 100. And clearly it was the latter, because he looked amazing and he looked like himself, and he, you know, rushed for his normal amount, but he was huge in the receiving game. And
I was gonna say, receiving game, 6 for 68, rushing yards, 13 yeah. for 39 is probably not a very,
fine, you know, and against the Bucks front, whatever. But, yeah. But it was just, I didn't know what to expect, or how much they'd use him, or like what it would look like, you know, after such a prolonged time off. And they're also missing. So, I mean, they have Debo and Kittle, but like they're missing Ayuk, and they've just been so banged up, and you never really know who's going to be rotating in and out of that lineup on offense. And they're, you know, I have in my mind, they're coming up next, for the Packers. So CMC looks like CMC.
You knew he would be in time for Green Bay. You know, Tua will be good in time for, you know, like that he'll be back and clicking in time for that Packers Thanksgiving game. Like, that's just how it works. Like, you're going to get usually players a little bit more at their best. It just always seems to work that way. What were you going to say, Grant?
Well, and the Packers, you know, that luck kind of evens out because they got the Rams the week before the Vikings with Nakua, or shortly before the Vikings without Nakua and Kupp. My takeaway from the Niners game is I feel bad for Baker because they've lost four in a row. They lost to the Ravens, the Falcons by 5, the Chiefs by 6 because they lost a coin toss in overtime. And then they just lost to the Niners by 3. And I just feel like if they had Evans or Godwin, they probably win some of those games. Like, they're playing good football. We're doing our picks on the radio every week, and I'm just kind of like picking the bottom to fall out on Tampa at some point, and they just don't die. They're losing, but they don't die. Like, I just have a lot of weird respect for what they've done, given that they've lost four in a row.
They're literally the anti-Chiefs. You're very like respectful of what they're doing, but they find ways to lose every week, whereas the Chiefs are like, this isn't fun, and they find ways to win every week. So Tampa, KC are juxtaposed very much in that way. All right, before we get to, I want to get to our bold predictions. Just really quick, I want to ask you guys this as we kind of wrap up, obviously, the bye week in the first half of the season. I want to ask you each, Grant, I will start with you. Do you feel as confident, less confident, or more confident about the Packers now than you did going into the season?
We made it. Green Bay versus Chicago. Coming off the bye week, one of the best rivalries in all of sports, and Green Bay looking to start the second half of the season strong. Cannot wait for this one. And just like Green Bay is ready to get back in the action, it's also time for you to get back in the action with Prize Picks. And with Prize Picks, you can win up to 100 times your money with as few as 4 correct picks. And right now, you can sign up and get $50 instantly when you play $5. You do not even need to win to receive the $50 bonus. It is guaranteed. Simply put, Prize Picks is the best way to win real money this football season. Which players are going off? Which ones aren't? Make your picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Christian Watson to explode versus Chicago, and Chicago to have to settle for a multitude of field goals against this Green Bay defense. The best part is that there are a ton of options out there for you to choose from. So what are you waiting for? Download the app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after you play your first $5 lineup. That's the Prize Picks app using code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly after your first $5 play. Prize Picks. Run your game. There's absolutely nothing like seeing a football game live, and that's even more so in Green Bay than in any other city or in any other stadium. I had the absolute best time going to the Houston game earlier this year as my son got to see his first regular season game live, and let me just tell you, it was absolutely perfect. And there's no question about it. The best and easiest way to get tickets is on Game Time. Game Time has a new feature called Game Time Picks that makes getting tickets to see your favorite teams play live even easier. When I started using Game Time, it was so easy to use, and Game Time filtered out all the extra garbage to show me just the incredible deals that they had on all the great seats. It was simple, efficient, and unbelievably easy to use. It was also super helpful seeing the seat views before buying. And enough with all the false advertising on pricing. Turn on all-in pricing on Game Time to see the total upfront cost with no surprise fees at checkout. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app, create an account, and use code PACKADAY for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code PACKADAY for $20 off. Download Game Time today. What time is it? Game Time.
That's a very good question. I feel like I could say both. I feel like I could say either. If their record was, so they're 6-3. If their record was lesser by a game or two, then maybe I'd say less. But the fact that they are in the spot that they're in with their quarterback missing games and just with all the muck and mud that we've seen, the ceiling that we all dreamed about before the year is still very much there. And I, in a long season, believe that it, you know, a team has to go through ups and downs, and they're experiencing ups and downs. So I guess I have to say higher. Like, I still feel really, really good about this team. That's not necessarily a guarantee that they're going to get there, but I think they absolutely can. Nothing that I saw in the first half precludes them from getting there. Nothing was disqualifying in the first half before the bye. Let's put it that way.
Perry? You had time to think. Well, Grant was
there. Yeah, I was going to say.
The way you phrased it is interesting, because it's a hard one to answer, because, like, when your expectations are so high going into the season, you almost like set yourself up for disappointment. But I am with Grant, I think 100% on this, where, like, and I think we'll probably get to this in our predictions, but, like, I'm still really high on this team, and I feel them, like, building towards something. Like, I feel them reaching this, like, pinnacle of sorts, and all that matters is getting hot at the right time. And to our point about the Chiefs right before, is like, when your record's good, if you figure it out and you figure it out, then, like, okay, watch out, you know? And I feel like that's a little bit where the Packers are at. Like, they've been finding ways to win, and it hasn't looked pretty all the time. And it hasn't maybe been like beat downs on bad teams that we've been hoping for. But if that's really where we're at, looking down on it, they're 6-3, and you come out of this healthier. Like, this team's really good. Like, this team is really, really good. And so, I don't know. I guess I'm feeling good about this second. I'm feeling really, like, optimistic about this second stretch.
I will say I feel the same as I did going into the year. Super optimistic and feel good. The one thing that gives me cause for concern is the front four, the pass rush. That's the one thing where I didn't feel like there would be a weakness there. I didn't know that I necessarily felt that it would be this, like, tremendous strength, but I definitely didn't see it being a weakness. And so far, it's kind of been a weakness. And it's really tough to, like, go on a run in the playoffs if your front four defensively is not playing well enough to, you know, help you win some of those games and help you win some of those games. So that's the one thing where I'm going to need a few more answers in the second half, whether it be from Rashawn, Kenny Clark, LVN, Devontae Wyatt, all of the above, some of the other guys. I don't care. If it can be Aaron Mosby can go on a heater for all I care at this point, but somebody needs to give me a little bit more reason for optimism in that front line. And if that can't happen, then I have legitimate concern that this team could reach the ceiling that they need to, but I'm still extremely optimistic about the team as a whole. And if anything, like you guys kind of both alluded to, the fact that we haven't even hinted or sniffed at their best football yet gives me hope, because I think they really will at some point. And if that comes at the right time, sign me the hell up, because that will be a very fun December, January, hopefully February at that point. Thoughts on that?
So the Preston Smith trade this week was actually, like, a nice touch point for, I think, some conversations about the front four, because it forced us to discuss and, like, talk about a scheme change and how that can have real tangible effects on certain players who are used to playing certain ways. And Kenny Clark always comes up because we're judging Jeff Hafley on his ability to maximize the players that Joe Barry had, right? Like, how do you get the most out of these guys? And scheme is a part of that. And I think it makes total sense why Preston Smith, especially as he ages, wasn't totally his best self this year. I don't get the scheme thing with Kenny Clark. It's like, I don't understand how a defensive coordinator could be like, hey, great player, not for me. Like, how do you not have a spot in your scheme? And I'm not saying that it's scheme. I'm trying to figure out why Kenny Clark hasn't been the player that he's been so consistently his entire career. So if either of you guys had thoughts on the scheme and the connection, I guess, or lack thereof to Kenny Clark's lack of performance this year, I'd love to get into that, because I think that conversation kind of started with Preston Smith's departure last week.
Grit and I talked about this on the radio. And I said, Andy, to be honest with you, I don't have an answer. Like, I really don't know why Kenny, because my only thought is that it takes Kenny like half a season to become Kenny. And in November and December, he just like turns on. That was a little bit in jest, I say. And my second is like, my only other actual analytic point was like, I would love to see having Devontae Wyatt back next to him, like what that does to aid in his ability to like win his one-on-ones. But Grant's counterpoint to that was Kenny's never really had strong guys next to him, and he's always found ways to win. So I don't know if that's really an answer at all. So would love your thoughts.
Yeah, one of the reasons why you usually don't mind trading for a pass rusher, defensive lineman, edge rusher midseason or doing something like that is because usually the job description is pretty simple. Like obviously there's some scheme things that go into it. Obviously there's some responsibilities within the scheme and within a certain play that you're expected to make and things you're supposed to do. But for the most part, your job description is pretty simple. You have a person in front of you that is trying to prevent you from getting to the point that you would like to get to, whether that be the running back or the quarterback. And it is your job to take that person that is in your way and somehow discard of them and get to the place that you want to go. And it's obviously oversimplifying it by stating that, but I honestly, quite frankly, at the end of the day, don't care if you are at the defensive end position, rushing from the interior, over center, standing up, hand in the dirt, wide nine, three technique, five technique. I don't care. Find a way to beat the person in front of you. And there are things that I am sure that Kenny Clark and Devontae Wyatt, LVN, Preston Smith, Rashawn Gary, all these guys have gone through where they're clearly asking them to do some different things with Jeff Hafley than they were under Joe Barry. It's not like this entire group as a collective was exactly tearing it up under Joe Barry either. And a lot of people, myself included, thought that this specific scheme where these guys were going to be able to go and attack more would allow them to maybe take off and even be better. A lot of people were really wanting Rashawn Gary and LVN to have their hand in the dirt. A lot of people really wanted to see Kenny Clark and Carl Brooks, Devontae Wyatt as more attacking players that could get up the field and not have to do as much thinking. I think a lot of people, again, myself included, thought this was going to be advantageous for these players. Now, I am willing to give maybe even, let's just say the half of the season that it took to maybe get your feet underneath you and understand the defense a little bit better and find your bearings in it. Okay, well, we've gotten that past us in a best case or a worst, whatever you want to view it. Like, we've got that part behind us. Now, second half of the season, you've got to buy. You've got time to let everything sink in. It is time to go. And again, I don't really care where people are lined up, how they're lined up. Beat the guy in front of you. Do it at a higher level than what you've been doing it so far. Because even when any of these guys have gotten consistent one-on-ones and opportunities in pass rush situations where you know you can rush the passer, they haven't been winning enough. So to me, this is a not scheme conversation. This is a Kenny, Devontae, LVN, Rashawn Gary, all of these guys. They just have to play better and find ways to win their one-on-ones a little bit more. That's how I view it, at least.
Yeah.
That's how I view it as well, but I don't watch the All-22 and I don't know scheme super well. So I am more than happy to fully and wholeheartedly agree with you on that.
Deal.
I just didn't know if there was some, because again, like, it's not like Kenny Clark is this hyper specific player. He's succeeded in multiple defenses for a long time. Like, he's been the most reliable, I think, consistent player on this defense for a while. And he's still very much young in his athletic prime. So I don't really get it either, but I don't want to chalk it up to scheme. And I think some fans have done that just because it's an easy talking point. I don't really know that it makes sense either.
Yeah, I don't think it's a scheme thing. Hopefully everything is sorted out during the bye week and they can come out and play strong against that Chicago Bears offensive line that we talked about, not exactly very strong in and of themselves. So it'd be a nice way to get a start for that front in the second half. All right, let's get to our main topic for today, which is our bold and spicy predictions for the second half of the season for the Packers. Who wants to go first? I'll go first if you guys want.
Go for it.
You said you have a bunch of them, so why don't you go first? Because I don't have as many.
All right, what are we going to go with first? All right, Jordan Love will throw three or fewer interceptions the remainder of the regular season. That's where I'm going first with my bold and spicy take. I do not believe this is a systemic issue for Jordan Love. I don't believe he's a gambler. I don't believe he's a gunslinger. I don't believe he is a quarterback who likes to put the ball in harm's way as much as it will seem. Now, maybe there's a tip ball, something in here there that maybe makes it go a little bit above that. It's a fluky play here, there, a Bo Melton falling down and the ball goes right to a defender. But I think Jordan, at the end of this stretch of regular season games, three or fewer interceptions that are his fault, like legitimately his fault, that aren't a fluky bounce play here or there. So that's where I'm going with. I think he takes much better care of the ball. I think in his press conference at the end of last game, you could really tell, like, he felt it. He understood it. He knows the assignment. He knows he has to do a better job taking care of it. I trust him. I trust Matt. I trust Tom Clements. They're going to get it cleaned up, three or fewer the remainder of the season.
I'm with you. I think we're just going to see a lot cleaner, more accurate ball from Jordan overall in the second stretch. I don't think that's that bold, so I didn't include it, but I'm like totally no, your interceptions one is like I, okay. I'm with, I just like the general premise of him like playing like just
I was like, do you want to one up me? You want to say two?
I'm with you on the number
interception like, the remainder of the season that Perry
I
said meant, it.
My statement is I don't think that bold of a take. But I'm with you. I do. I think there is probably a decent amount of like introspection this past week on ways that he can take care of the football better.
What I like about bigger picture kind of bouncing off of your take, Andy, is that all of the things that I think are going to kill this Packers team or could kill this Packers team showed up in this Detroit game. And then they had to sit on it for 2 weeks. And to your point, like I agree with you that Jordan Love seemed to understand the gravity. He seemed frustrated after the Detroit game. And you're talking about drops, pre-snap penalties, kind of hammerheaded penalties, which Matt LaFleur said, all right, if those take place, you can just bring your helmet and come over to the sideline and watch the game with me. Like all of those things happened in the Detroit game. And then they went on bye for 2 weeks and they had to stew on that. And I think hopefully if this team's made of the right stuff, that leads to cleaner play and a lot of those issues being resolved, starting with the Bears. Go beat up on another division opponent because it seemed like they were really frustrated. It's like, man, we can't keep doing this against Detroit, Minnesota. We got another crack at it with this bad taste ready where you're going to want to get that out of your mouth. I like how this lines up kind of along those same lines. Interceptions, obviously a huge part of that. Yeah.
I think they're going to be juiced up for this next game, like really juiced up. I'm going to give you my boldest one first. Sorry, we're going to get less and less, but I think in this next stretch, the Packers only lose one game.
In like the remainder of the regular season?
The remainder Ooh. Of the regular season.
Wow.
When I look at this schedule, and this is me like legitimately thinking, if the Packers play up to their standard of football, I think in this stretch, they can beat every one of these teams. Every one of these teams has a weakness that this Packers team can exploit, including the 49ers, including the Lions, including Minnesota away. But however, this is football, and there's definitely going to be an every given Sunday bounce the wrong way situation. But I won't say on this podcast they're going to go undefeated because that would be like extremely unrealistic. However, I don't think it is unrealistic to say that they could go down this stretch and only lose one game if they play up to their standard of football. Like, we watched them get hot at the end of 2023. We watched them go to the Cowboys and drop a 40 plus burger on them. Like, this offense, and I think this defense is better than they were last season, even with the issue of the pass rush. Like, they can be a powerhouse juggernaut offense if they clean up the interceptions, if they clean up the penalties, like we literally just discussed. They're just like one or two like stepping stone building blocks away from getting back to that kind of ball. It's right there.
I'm gonna add on that because I will just nuke one of mine right now because now mine seems lame in comparison. But I said Green Bay will run the table in the division the rest of the season. They'll go 4-0 against the NFC North. They're gonna beat the Lions in Detroit, Minnesota in Minnesota, Chicago in Chicago, and Chicago in Green Bay. It's 4-0, run the table against the division the remainder of the year. Grant's looking already like he's stunned, he's shocked, he's offended and hurt.
Well, okay, so two things. First, my brain is like, I did not bring the heat to this podcast to match the both of you. But then the second part is, okay, I could totally see them beating the Bears twice. Going to US Bank and going to Ford Field, I think that's the hangup. Although I watched Sam Darnold today, like I saw the tweets from Vikings people saying, well, what could Kevin O'Connell do with Ryan Tannehill? And I saw like one or two of those. I'm like, oh, so I don't know. I could see it with the Vikings. I could totally see them going to US Bank. I think US Bank is genuinely one of the most difficult places to go play in the NFL. But when you're used to playing there once a year, it takes some of the shock and awe and the panic factor away. It's still a difficult place to play, but you kind of know what you're in for, right? You're not walking into this big surprise. So it's still a massive uphill battle to climb. I don't inherently disagree with either one of your bold takes about the record in the division or otherwise, though. If this team plays well, I could totally see it happening.
My other thing is that if I were to guess on which team they lose to, it would be the Lions. However, it's very difficult to beat a team three times, Detroit. So just saying.
So you're maybe predicting that Green Bay is going to see Detroit again later in the season.
It's possible. Yes, very likely.
I see how I read between the lines there. Mm-hmm. All right, Grant. Now that Barry and I have exhausted everything, what would you, how you have any bold predictions left, Grant?
I do. I was going to say, I thought I was missing something. It's like when, okay, so that would be one. Then would be two. So going back to last year, I thought they won their last
Barry
year.
The seven.
Oh, okay. So I'm glad. I don't know if this is a bold prediction or more. I just think the most important body parts on this entire team are the soft tissues in Jair Alexander's legs. Like if those things gotta be okay in the second half, because I think when he's out, that back end of the defense, everyone slides a spot. Right. And I think Evan Williams, we saw his value. And we've seen Xavier McKinney's value. He's been in the lineup and we knock on wood that continues, but I think they have a group of safeties they really like. And Javon Bullard hopefully is only going to get better. So if one of those guys goes down, I feel okay about that group still. I think their defensive line is so deep. And part of the problem is they don't have the star guy leading the way. But if one of those guys goes down, it's like, okay, well, they have four other guys who are in the same neighborhood. If Jair's down, I mean, that star power is really important in the back end of the defense. And it's really scary because I could totally see it happening where they're red hot in December. It's like, here we go. And then we get a report out of practice on Thursday. It's like Jair had to leave practice and his hamstrings jacked up, right? Like we've just seen that before. So I think the value to the defense and the precedent now of the last couple of years of him being banged up, I just think he's such an important player to be healthy for this team to truly have the highest ceiling we think they can have. I think they can win without him, but I don't know if they can fully achieve like the goal of making or winning a Super Bowl without him.
I think that's totally fair.
You know, Andy, you said, you know, the pass rush in your mind is the weak link. And I don't know if I disagree with you on it, but I do feel like the cornerback room without Jair Alexander scares me more than this pass rush.
Agreed.
Like a 1,000%. If we went into a playoff game, you know, without Rashawn Gary or without Jair Alexander, I would take Jair over Rashawn in an absolute heartbeat. I don't actually think it would even be a question, just because I feel like the other guy, and that's not really like a dig on Rashawn, but it's just like what Jair brings and what the other guys lack in makeup skills, I feel like so vastly outweighs like what the pass rush could make up without a Rashawn.
Your best case scenario is they get Carrington in there instead of Eric Stokes. Finally, Carrington and Nixon are on the outside. Bullard's in the slot. Evan Williams and Xavier McKinney are at safety. And it's like against the right team, maybe that's workable. But when you start talking about playoff teams, if it's Philly, you've got AJ Brown, right? Like if it is Minnesota, you've got Addison and Jefferson. If it's Detroit, you have Amon-Ra St. Brown. If you end up, you know, like there's just too many really good teams with really good wide receivers that you are going to need to find a solution for. And that solution more often than not probably needs to be Jair Alexander. So I'm with you. It just, it's going to be super difficult for them to win anything significant. If, to your point, Grant, if those soft tissues or any other bone in his body is not working the way that it's supposed to, he is a massively, massively important part of this team the remainder of this season.
I just, you're rattling off all those teams, and what's frustrating to me, and I don't, like, I have zero interest in ever being the, like, I was right about this guy. I just don't care. But, like, we knew all this before the draft, right? And this is when we were kind of getting ready for the draft and trying to figure out what positions or players Goody might target. It's like, well, look around the NFC. Forget the NFC. Look around the division, right? You have St. Brown and Jameson Williams, who's now back, and Laporta, and then all the weapons in Minnesota. And, like, I thought Chicago would be better, but even on Chicago's worst day, they still have a couple skill position players who can beat you. Like, I just don't know that they have the firepower at corner. And a lot of teams don't. Like, there's, I don't know that there's a team in the NFL that's like, if our number one corner goes down, we feel great. Like, it just doesn't bother us at all. Like, corner depth at any position in the NFL is super hard to find. That's why this league is so competitive. But I just wonder if we won't look back at the end of the year thinking, like, yeah, like, probably could have addressed corner a little bit, because Goody's been steadfast. I like this group. They like the talent they have in house. And maybe it comes together in a way that makes sense that Goody's seen all along. And I hope that's the case, but it just worries me. That's all.
There's been a little bit too much overconfidence in the trio of Nixon, Valentine, and Stokes up until this point. It has clearly not been what they expected. They've basically tried to limit as much Stokes and Valentine up until this point as possible by putting Nixon on the outside and getting Bullard in the slot. Even having those Stokes ahead of Valentine still at this point is beyond frustrating. And when Jair's out, you got to play a lot of those guys a bunch. So yeah, it's concerning. And I do think that that is a potential weak point if Jair can't play. So hopefully that is not something we have to speak into existence, and hopefully he can have a great remainder of the season and stay healthy the remainder of this year. All right. I already did two of mine. So Perry, I will let you go to your second one.
Oh, well, we touched on it, so I didn't want to speak too much earlier since I had this in my back pocket, but one of my bold predictions was actually that the interior pass rush is going to be the strength of this pass rush going into the end of this season. Like, I feel very confident that Kenny and Devontae Wyatt as a tandem is going to start to push pockets. And I think mostly because, as we're, you know, kind of talking about the Bears upcoming a little bit, is like interior guys, guards, centers, like, you get worn down a lot as the season goes on, and we're seeing a lot of injuries along lines, and people are starting to have to shuffle, et cetera. So I think they're really going to be able to exploit that. Halfley has done a lot of really fun, like, blitz packages and things. And those are usually, like, you know, with McKinney or with Cooper or whoever he chooses to do, like, whether it's around the edge or like up the center. But I think, like, the heart of this rush is going in the, and where everyone is going to kind of follow is going to be actually through Clark and Wyatt.
Love it. All right, Grant, what's your second one?
I have yet to figure out how to shape this into a take. Here's my bold prediction, is that Josh Jacobs' production or workload will go down slightly. And I don't have the slightest clue between Brooks Wilson and Marshawn Lloyd. I have no idea how they're going to fix it. I know that's not a fix it, set it up. Because for the last week or so, it's clear that they like Wilson and Brooks both a lot. They've both been getting a lot of carries. So I guess my bold take, or my, can it be a bold question? Like, I have no clue who's running back to on this team at all. And I'm not sure the Packers do right now. And I don't know that that's a good or a bad thing. It's just it's an odd spot to be in early November. So I guess more than anything, I just wanted to bring that up, and I'm sorry I couldn't shape it in a, like, a hot take or a bold prediction. I just want your thoughts on that.
Does it matter?
I don't think it matters, but I have a similar one I'll throw out there. One of mine that I have on my list, Marshawn Lloyd will find a way to play an important role on the team before the year is done. And I think getting a young, talented running back in the fold who has fresh legs at the end of the season, come running time in November, December, January, hopefully February. Something tells me, I don't know if that's due to an injury at the running back position or just getting him involved and he takes off or whatever it might be. Just something in my gut tells me at some point, fresh legs, Marshawn Lloyd, ready to go, come running time, he's going to play a factor in this season in some way, in an important way for the remainder of this year. I love Brooks, really like Emmanuel Wilson. I think he's been fantastic. Obviously, Josh Jacobs is the guy. You've got Lloyd coming back at some point. I also don't know how the Rubik's Cube sort of fits all together, but somehow, some way, Marshawn Lloyd's going to play a role in it.
I felt that way about Lloyd before the season too, Andy. Just like literally just a gut feeling. Like not like there's nothing to go off of other than I really like him as a runner and I think he's really explosive. And the timing was terrible of him going on IR, but then this might be like a hindsight thing where we're like, how great was it that he came in halfway through the season and he hadn't taken a single snap? And to your point, Grant, about Josh Jacobs production, I want to edit it a little bit that I think that when you get someone in who can take the load off a little bit, that like you won't need to, Josh Jacobs won't need to like bear the weight so much. And I actually think it will be good for him, right? Because so much of this offense is like predicated on a running back rotation. And right now, again, we love Wilson, we love Brooks, they've looked great, but there is a pretty clear difference when they're in versus when Josh Jacobs in, right? In terms of like yards, carries, et cetera, like just like general production. So I think when, hopefully, if Lloyd is who we think he is, you can balance it out in a, you know, the way they used to do with Aaron Jones and whoever his running back two was, like keep both legs fresh so that when they are both in, they're doing their best. That didn't end in the most eloquent way, but I think you know what I mean.
No, and hopefully his production stays really high. I just hope his workload comes down a little bit because the workload that is put on Josh Jacobs is a little bit of a reflection on the state of the team, right? If the Packers are asking Josh Jacobs to do, you know, 27 carries and to do, that probably means that another part of the team isn't holding up their end of the bargain, right? The rest of the running back room can't be trusted, which I think was the case last year. They don't feel that way about Emmanuel Wilson anymore. He took the jump needed in the offseason for them to really use him and feel more confident using him. And Matt LaFleur's explicitly said that. If Malik Willis is in, right? Like if Malik Willis is playing, you're going to ask Josh Jacobs to do more like he did in Jacksonville, right? The goal is, you don't have a lot of those types of games after the bye because Jordan Love is healthy and their offense is running normally. And especially as Lloyd comes back, you have a deeper running back room. That's not to say that Josh Jacobs couldn't get 25 carries to help ice a playoff game like that. That would be fine. I just don't necessarily love the idea of asking him to do it multiple times in November against Chicago, right? Like, I think you can get your running stats and get that part of your offense filled up with some other players too. And Lloyd hopefully coming back healthy is a big part of that.
I like it. All right, let's get to one more each. Do you guys each have one more in the hopper? Or do you want, no? All right, you want me to run through? All right, I'll run through my, a couple
you guys
of my,
go, that was all I had.
All right, yeah. Good. I'll go through a couple other minds. Let's see. I had number one, I had my list is the offense is going to explode. It's just going to explode. You're not going to stop them. I don't care. Like Christian Watson hasn't even begun to reach what he is going to be, I think, in this season. Same thing with Dontavian Wicks. I think Romeo can add more to it. I think Tucker's going to continue to get better. We just talked about the running backs. The offensive line is still good to go. Like Jordan Love is going to be healthy in the second half of the season. They're going to start off strong against Chicago. They're going to take off. They're going to find their rhythm, and it's going to go off. Rashawn Gary, he's going to average a sack a game the remainder of this regular season. So one sack per game on average. It might be a three sack game. It might be a little fluky and some garbage time stuff, whatever. But at the end of the year, he's going to get, because he's got two on the year so far, right? I think he's got two right around there. He's going to get to his 10 sacks. He's going to get 8 the remainder of this season. But it's, you know, like I said, maybe some garbage time fluky ones in there, but he's going to get to it. And he's going to average a sack a game the remainder of the season. Xavier McKinney is going to win the Defensive Player of the Year award. So he's going to come up strong the remainder of the season. And I think he actually has one, if not two, pick sixes in him the remainder of this season. So that's what's going to get him across that finish line from a Defensive Player of the Year standpoint. And then you know what? Why the hell not? The Packers are going to make the Super Bowl. I don't know if I have a prediction to get to past that. I'm not saying they will or won't, but they're going to make it there, damn it. So those are my spicy and bold takes.
I have two things. One is Xavier McKinney's already being talked about as a like no contest bona fide all pro this season. Yes. So I think, and he
very much deserves it. So I think defensive player of the year is not out of the question. If I had to think of one too, as we've been talking, and I think Grant, you and I talked about this maybe a little bit on the radio this week, is this isn't really a take, more is like along Grant's lines of how he took this show, but I really want more Christian Watson in this offense. I just think that this offense, like, he just like does good things with the ball in his hands, and like he doesn't drop the ball. If you noticed, like, when he gets targeted, he doesn't drop the ball. So,
but his reputation among Packers fans is that he drops the ball.
Watch him, like, just watch him. He just does good things, and like, you don't need to use him just as a deep threat. Like, he just does good things when he has the ball in his hands, and he doesn't get nearly enough targets. And I think it's a little bit because, to Grant's point, they've been running the ball a lot, and secondly, they have to spread the ball around. Like, they have so many weapons. They throw it to Reed, they throw it to Dobbs, they throw it to Kraft, etc. I don't care. I want like 5 targets minimum to Christian Watson every game.
I have a pop quiz for you guys. How many carries, rushing attempts, does Christian Watson have on the season?
What?
How many rushing attempts does he have?
4?
No, he doesn't have that many. 1?
1. 1 for -4 yards. This used to be a player that they would specifically try to get the ball in his hands, whether it be on a reverse, a jet sweep, maybe a pop pass is technically not a rush, but you get my point of like, this used to be somebody that for a while, they found a way to get the ball in his hands. And I get Jaden Reed has kind of taken on that role, and that's not a bad player to put in that role, but I want to see a few more manufactured touches for Christian Watson because he is dynamic with the ball in his hands. And I think that's been something that's been a little bit lacking, and I'd like to see that brought back, quite frankly. So I'm with you, Perry.
I would like to see that. The one caveat or the one point of pushback is it seems like every time this year where they've made an active effort or Jordan Love has made an active effort to get Christian Watson the ball ends up going in the middle of 3 defenders and Christian Watson ends up like bent 6 different ways. Like,
I'm not saying into triple coverage down the field. I'm saying like, again, a pop pass, sure, screen to the outside. Like, there's the play they used to run where it was just like a crossing pattern, and it was like obviously just a simple mesh concept to some extent, but they would usually use some picks and some rubs to get Watson, like, just a simple pass where you get the ball in his hands. It's like that touchdown against Philly where Love threw it, where he came off the bench, was a great example of that. Like, just some simple stuff like that, just to open him up where it doesn't have to be that he's just MBS in this thing. Like, I get that you want to use him as that decoy. I get that you want to throw it down the field to him sometimes. And that should definitely, there should be a piece of that in this offense as well, but he's more than that. And I still think you got to find a way to get the ball in his hands.
That's how I feel, Andy. Like, get him the ball in space because his speed will take it the rest of the way. Like, the ball doesn't need to do the traveling. Christian Watson with the ball can do the traveling on his own. And I think oftentimes when they try to do the deep pass, it's not necessarily always set up for him to get yards after the catch. But if you do the simples, like Andy just said, the meshes, the slants, etc., Christian Watson's fast enough to beat a defender and get yards after the catch.
Yep.
I think of that one play. This is a really random pull, but if there's two people who might actually remember this, remember the Raiders game in 2019 and Matt LaFleur's first, it was a beautiful Sunday at Lambeau. It was like the one game their offense like actually lit it up.
Was it Aaron Rodgers' perfect passer rating game?
It might've been, I don't know. I just remember I watched it at my grandma's house. I have a very vivid memory. They got it to MVS. It couldn't have been more than like a 7-yard slant, him coming across, and then he turned it up the sideline and he scored. It was like 50 plus yards. Like, it's that type of play. That was the one time with MVS they ever actually did the thing that you're kind of talking about, Perry, to your point where it's like the ball doesn't have to do the traveling. And I 100% agree with that. That's an MVS play that I thought of. For whatever reason, the behind the line is like the rushing attempts for the wide receivers haven't seemingly been super effective recently, but they don't have to be carried. To your point, like, it doesn't have to be a pop pass or a sweep. It could be something near the line of scrimmage.
Yep.
To get him the ball. But that MBS catch against, they might have even been, no, they wouldn't have been Oakland at the time. I can't even remember.
No, Aaron Rodgers threw for 5 touchdowns this game.
Because Adams was out in that game and they just spread the ball around. Yeah.
Wow. The perfect passer rating game. I was in Italy watching this with my sister. I remember this game vividly.
I was at my grandma's house in rural Wisconsin, but I'm glad you were in Europe. Jesus.
I was at Lambeau Field. So take that.
Yeah, nice.
It's probably the only place cooler than Italy. So I think we can say that is Green Bay, Wisconsin.
You guys have never been to my grandma's house, obviously, but it's fine.
All right. Last but not least, before we get out of here, Packers open as 6-point favorites against the Chicago Bears on the road in Chicago. Perry, how are you feeling for that game?
I feel great. Not to rehash too much of what we said, but just like the reasons why I feel great is because I think this team is going to take the bye week to like really put it all together. And this is like actually one of Matt LaFleur's strong suits as a coach, is getting people's head rights post what they deem to be a bad loss. And I would say the Detroit game was a bad loss. To Grant's point earlier, they've had a whole extra week to sit on it. And I think they're going to come out like really raging. And I think it helps that it's against a division opponent who's in a really weak spot and in a place where they can exploit. Matt LaFleur has a fantastic track record against the Bears also. And if I'm not mistaken, this game is at home.
The Bears game?
Yeah.
It's in Chicago.
It's in Chicago. Okay. Either way, Packers play well in both places, so it doesn't matter. So anyway, this is like the start of them like getting hot and going on their run and putting it all together post bye. So feeling good.
Okay. It should be. It should be all of the things that Perry just said. If this is the team that we think they are, hope they are, praying that they can be, then it's all lined up for them. And I think it's bigger than Aaron Rodgers. This franchise just loves beating the Bears. And I think that's like even an extra kick in the pants coming out of the bye. Not that they needed one. They have plenty of motivation coming out of that Detroit game. I feel as good about this game as you can feel about a game in the NFL, if that makes sense. Like, obviously nothing is ever certain because it's the NFL, but as good as you can feel about a game in the NFL, I feel that way about this one.
Yeah, I like it as well. Feel very, very good about the Packers. The one thing I just can't handle, though, is like after the Bears have been completely crapping the bed on offense this entire time, I can't take like an opening drive, like 80-yard touchdown drive by the Bears, just to like, even if the Packers go on to win 77-7, like even if that ends up being the case, they score 11 touchdowns on offense and they don't allow points the rest of the game, that will still make me upset that the Bears went down and scored a touchdown right away after being so bad. It's just like, just shut them down early, let the offense get the lead and then go to work. I just don't want to see like this Bears get any semblance of like early feel like, oh, our offense is like doing better this week or anything like that. Just go shut them down. I don't want Bears points in this game. I know the Bears defense is good. The offense will probably struggle from time to time just because they are that good when they want to be, but meaning the Bears defense, but I want to see this Bears offense stay in reverse, quite frankly. And I don't want to see some 300-yard performance from the Bears this week.
I think the Packers' goal should be to come out in the first quarter and within 8 minutes have every Bears player feeling, yeah, here we go again. Nothing changed.
Totally agree.
That's the goal. It's a lot harder said or done than said, a lot easier said than done, but still that's the dream. And that's, I think, leads to the best outcome next Sunday for sure.
I want the Packers to go into this game with the role of executioner. Like, the Bears are just staggering along. They're like begging for death at this point. They want the season to be over. They understand the writing's on the wall. Just go and finish it. Like, that's what I want the mentality to be for Green Bay this week.
Put them out of their misery.
Put them out of their misery. Hell yes. And then do it again in the final week of the season, just for good measure. Just after you've already, you know, like that's the final slam in the casket. Final week.
Here's the first pick in the draft, guys. Here you go.
In Green Bay. I don't think they can probably get like 4 wins is probably already going to be too many wins to get to number one. We'll see. I don't know. Maybe not. What is the.
Nah, because the Jets and.
Browns at 2, Jacksonville 2, Raiders 2 wins, Giants already 2-8. Like, probably one of those teams doesn't get to 4 wins would be my guess. So thankfully, hopefully the Bears cannot get to that number one pick, but. Yeah. By the way, I really want to see Caleb Williams go on to have a successful career. Maybe it can be another one of these things where like he sucks in Chicago and then gets to another team, hopefully in the AFC, and then just goes out and decides to dominate. But like, if the Bears really did like the Jordan of picking Sam Bowie right before Michael Jordan, like obviously the reverse for Chicago this time around, where Jaden Daniels goes 2 and they got the wrong quarterback again, after passing up on CJ Stroud, by trading out of that pick and then by and obviously Trubisky over Pat Mahomes, like would that be a shame?
It'd be too bad.
All right, friends, final thoughts or plugs on the way out. Perry, the floor is yours.
Not too many plugs. If you've been listening for a minute, you notify me on Packs What She Said as well, PWSS Podcast on Twitter, And Pax What She Said on Blue Sky, because Maggie made that for us this weekend. So you can find us there as well as YouTube. All of our shows are on YouTube. We had a really fun bi-week episode with a one Andrew Merteg, who is also a Pack a Day podcaster. That was really fun, breaking down just like the first half of the season. Yeah, we'll be back with a Bears preview this week.
We'll look forward to that. Grant, how about you, bud?
Nightly radio show 4 to 6, affiliates around the state. I stream the show on Twitter and YouTube and Facebook. And Monday of this week, big Edmund Fitzgerald theme show, which I always look forward to every year. So that's awesome. Going to be fun. Otherwise, it's a bye week. We're waiting for the Bears. So it's Bears week. That'll be fun to talk about too.
There you go. I look forward to that as well. By the way, we're recording this Sunday night. Texans currently beating the Detroit Lions 23-7 with Jared Goff having 3 interceptions at halftime. So hopefully future listeners are celebrating a Lions loss, and that will, you know, help Green Bay obviously as they try to catch up in the NFC North. But right now, Texans 16-point lead at halftime. She is Perry Goldstein. Follow her on Twitter at Perry_Goldstein. That is Wisco Grant. You can find him on Twitter at Wisco Grant. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. And of course, you can find the podcast at Packaday Podcast. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.
Go Pack Go.